5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, I love that theme tune. Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. This is the technology show where we talk tech. I know, who'd have thought? If it's an accessible app or gadget or thingamajig, whatever it is, if it's accessible, we're going to talk about it. If it isn't, we're going to shout about it loudly. Anyway, as you may have noticed, I am not Stephen Scott. I am Sean Preece. Hooray! Sadly, Stephen is unwell. I don't know why I'm laughing there. Sorry, Stephen. Stephen is unwell and couldn't make it for the recording, but we forced him to stay at home, but I'm sure he'll be back for next week, if not the week after. Who knows? But I'm always available. I'm just saying, just putting it out there. Anyway, don't worry, because the regular tech talkers are still here. We have Mr. Robin Christofferson. Hello, Robin.
Hi. When you started talking, I was going to say, Stephen, you're sounding good. I thought you were supposed to be unwell.
It's that new Bristolian accent he's trying out. It's working. And of course, talking of lovely golden syrupy voices, we have Mr. Andy Wynn. Hello, Andy.
Oh, hi. Hi, how are you both doing?
Now, you see, I set you up there and you totally spoiled it. I thought you were going to do your golden syrupy voice and instead you did a weird nerdy voice.
That's his normal one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello. Hi, how are you?
I wish I could speak like that.
Where have you been, Sean?
What do you mean, Andy?
Where have you been?
I don't know if you've noticed, but there is a lockdown in place at the moment.
Oh, we last heard from you in episode 266 and then gone.
Oh, well, don't bring that up. I simply stepped out for a bottle of milk and Stephen locked the door behind me. And I've been banging on that door ever since.
Oh, dear.
No, for people that don't know, I was on Tech Talk a long time ago. And I've got to say, I'm so excited to be back. Also, I'm slightly nervous. I don't know if you can tell, but I am. You've built this show up since I was here. It's just all so professional now. I feel out of place.
Yeah, it's not the ragtag, mismatch of a show that it used to be. Yeah, we're professional.
Yeah,
now.
I can tell.
I was going to say you're in good company, so yeah. Somewhere in between. Somewhere in the middle.
So how's everyone doing? It almost seems like a bit of a cliche question to ask now, because everyone asks, so how are you doing in these strange days? But you know what? I really am interested because it is strange days. Doesn't it seem so weird now? Is everyone coping okay?
So far, so good. It's just a very busy house. But yeah, I mean, the lockdown kind of hasn't affected us, but I have this horrible feeling that as soon as somebody close to us is really impacted, then it's going to feel very real and very different. So yeah, I mean, we don't think that Stephen's got the actual lurgy. It's something else. Man flu.
Well, we hope so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, fingers crossed on that count. But it's so far so good.
And how are you doing, Andy?
Yeah, all good here. Just hair getting to an unnaturally long length. It's like going back to the 1970s here. What's going on?
It's funny you say that, because that's what I wanted to go on to. Look, I know this is so serious and there's more serious aspects to it, but what about the hair? It's getting ridiculous. It's like we're going back in time. I am now sporting an 80s mullet. If we go on any longer, I'm going to have a Leo Sayer perm thing going on. And never mind going online for your groceries and you're just in a virtual waiting room to get in a virtual supermarket. On Amazon, it's impossible to get any hair clippers. I mean, I don't know what to do. It's terrible. I'm going to have to start wearing a hat.
This reminds me of one of my favourite all-time films, Gregory's Girl. From the 70s,
That's
big hair.
That's who I look like.
Gordon Sinclair, set in Scotland. Big shout out to Andy and Steve there, yeah. Stephen. So yeah, love the hair, love the film. Don't watch the second one.
Oh, well, now you spoil it for me. See, that's the other thing though, isn't it? I mean, sorry, we will get to the show in just a second. I'm just off on one at the moment. The amount of Netflix and Disney Plus and everything that I'm watching now, it's unreal. But I have noticed on Netflix that the amount of AD, the new releases, the AD is getting a little bit spotty, as in there's none available on the new films I see there. Is that just me?
I think Stephen mentioned this last week and he had to wait 2 weeks before the AD popped up. Can't remember the film it was now. I was listening. But yeah, so keep trying.
He went through a period of watching all of these sort of virus-related films. So Contagion was in that list. Air, that one that was filmed in Glasgow as well with Brad Pitt. That was probably on the list as well. So, yeah, I know he went through a period of watching all of these
depressing films. Yes, that sounds like Stephen, always cheery and upbeat. Anyway, I hope everyone out there is doing well. And, another 3 weeks, I say. We'll wait and see. Yeah, we're getting used to it now. I will say one thing about it. You know, when I'm out in the street clapping on a Thursday for the NHS and the delivery guys and all the key workers, it's actually quite nice. You know, there's that real communal spirit, even though you can't get close to each other. It's something really nice about that. It's just a bit of a positive amongst all the negatives, I suppose.
We've always done that since it was a thing. And we've always gone into our back garden. I don't know why. We just thought, okay, we're supposed to clap outside our house and we spend all the time in our back garden rather than our front garden. So we were out the back and there were other people in the street opposite out the back. Not many. And last Thursday, Judith suddenly thought, hey, I think we're supposed to be out the front, because she'd just seen it on the TV that morning and all the people that she'd seen were out the front. Lo and behold, we go out the front. All the street's there.
It's like
all the
festival.
Street is out the front. Yeah. And we felt really, really bad, because for the last however many weeks that people have been doing it, those Christoffersons, they don't care. They're not clapping. We were out the back. So we feel like knocking on every door of in our street now to say, honestly, we were just out the back for some bizarre reason. That was so weird. But yeah, that is so brilliant.
It is.
Do it out of your penthouse window, Andy.
Yes. Yeah, most of my noise has been made by the neighbours downstairs. Yeah, they like not just clapping, but also banging on pots and pans.
Oof. And a little bit worried.
It's just unusual. Yeah, just unusual to hear noise. The car horns is like, oh yeah, there is traffic outside, because normally
there are still other people in the world. I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, come on, I'm losing track. We got to get on with the show. Oh, you could talk all day, you two. Anyway, hello and thank you for listening. In this episode, we've got Apple iPhone news, Apple and Google working together, shocking news, Braille keyboards, Echo skills, and your emails. But to kick off, Robin, we got to pamper your nerdiness again, because I know you've been talking about Harry Potter and Star Wars, and this week you want to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide. It's the 42nd year anniversary or something?
Absolutely. So H2G2, for people that are in the know.
Nerd.
42 years anniversary last month that it came out, obviously in novel form, first ever book, and it's been in loads of incarnations since, but the BBC Radio dramification, or whatever you call it, dramatization. That's brilliant. You need
no,
to get
I like
those.
Dramification. Yeah, okay. I'm using that one.
All right then. But yeah, so 42nd anniversary, 42, obviously important number. So an important anniversary. And it just made me think, because I've recently acquired a pair of Amazon earbuds that have the A Lady built in. And I was thinking, you know, is this the closest we've ever got to the Babel fish? You stick something in your ear and it can translate for you. Maybe not, because actually the Google Pixel Buds, I think, do automatic language translation, which these don't do. But at least you can ask the A-Lady.
At the Google I.O., when they did launch the Galaxy Buds, not the Galaxy Buds, the Google Buds. Pixel Buds, thank you. They did show that off as, oh, this translation. But to be honest, you could do that with any Bluetooth headset. It was just the phone using a translation app.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a, I don't know, that seemed a little bit shady to me. But the Amazon Echo Buds, on the other hand, that seems almost like the real deal. Well, actually, let me rephrase that, because you still can't do real-time conversational translations on the fly, can you? But I think the difference here is that I don't know of any other earbuds that have the voice assistant actually built into the earbuds themselves. They don't rely on a phone. Of course, you need the phone for the internet connection, but you know what I'm saying. A standalone device like this, I don't know of any others.
Yeah, so I don't know if the Pixel Buds have the Google Assistant built in. But certainly these Amazon earbuds do, because it's not using the A-Lady on your phone. It is using your phone as a hotspot or a, you know, connection to the internet, but they are actually built in there. So, obviously there's so many things you can do with the A-Lady, a couple of which we're going to look at this week. But I really like them. They've got good noise cancellation. They're the only things I've got which you actually jam into your ear canals and hence can help reduce a lot of noise, but they do have a pass-through mode. So I probably will mostly be using these on trains and buses when that's again a thing, but because, you know, they make it easier to hear things when there's a lot of noise going on around you. But yeah, so I thought I'd throw that out, but mainly it's to shout out for the 42nd anniversary of H2G2. Oh, and by the way, if people are interested in text adventure games,
there, but no, apparently not. Keep going.
Yep, keep going. So, text adventure games, you must remember the Infocom version of Hitchhiker's text adventure game back in the 80s, probably.
No.
If you are into that sort of thing, on iOS, there is a free game called Frotz, F-R-O-T-Z. And it comes with a number of text adventure games pre-installed, but you can also go to a kind of an IMDb equivalent, a kind of a database of all things text adventure, and you can download hundreds or maybe even thousands, including that Infocom version of Hitchhikers. And I would probably use a Bluetooth keyboard to drive that, because it's obviously text instructions based, yeah. So you'll be doing quite a bit of typing. But yeah, real throwback, and I love a good text adventure game.
Wow, that's going back, and that's all accessible then?
Yep, totally.
Perfect, so look left, go north,
yep.
All that sort of thing.
Control,
oh, well.
Yep.
That'll keep
in front
you
of
going
bulldozer.
For hours, Robin.
Yeah, love it.
Well, I got to say, I'm interested in the Echo Buds, because I do love the Amazon Echo ecosystem anyway. But of course, you've got so much choice out there now. You've got the AirPod Pros, and I've got some cheap £20 Tozo Bluetooth earbuds, and they're fine. So it's all about the price point for me. That's the important thing. The Echo Buds, they're not exactly budget, are they?
No, I think they're £130. yeah, but they are good quality, so they've got Bose sound technology in there, so they're not your kind of budget ones, but they're not, I wouldn't call them sexy, they're quite bulbous, they don't stick out of your ear too much, but they're pretty.
I was going to
mention
this. Yeah, now they don't have the usual headphone shape, as in the Apple ones and the ones I have, which are the Huawei ones, which can continue that kind of headphone just without the wire that dangles down. These just look like you're putting
a blob.
I don't know, just like bottle top caps in your ears.
Yeah, a big blob.
They've lost the sort of stem, yeah.
Yeah, there's no stem or anything. They're just a round blob, a little bit tear-shaped, and the kind of last, the pointy bit of the tear, kind of bend that round at a right angle and stick it in your ear canal. That's the kind of thing, with a rubber tip on, you'd be pleased to know. So yeah, I think that's... They're not sexy, but, you know, they've got the A-Lady built in, so they've got to be a winner, yeah. Haven't they?
Yeah, that's a big plus, isn't it, having the instant access. And how does she hear you well, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you can have it by just saying her name, or you can set up various single and double taps, and one of them could be to invoke her if you wanted to do it that way instead. But unlike the Amazon A-Lady app on your phone, which you can trigger her from as well... that way of triggering her through the app doesn't allow you to play media and a number of other things. So there are restrictions there, but there's no limitation to this one. It is like having a full Echo in your ear hole.
Ooh,
nice.
That's pretty cool. Well done. And you kept that from under 15 minutes. Well done,
that's
Robin.
Right.
Thanks for that. And I can't believe I jumped to that one. I missed the first thing in my list, and that is the announcement and the launch... Oh, hang on. Calm down a minute. Let me take a breath. Whew. The iPhone SE second generation. It's finally here. And Robin, I've got to say, last week you called it.
Well, I mean, it was going to come out sometime this month, which is what Stephen and I agreed. But I said it's going to be sooner rather than later. And yeah, just dropped straight after the show. Wednesday, I think it was, wasn't it, last week?
Yep.
So yeah, what do you think? Are you going to get one?
Oh, of course. Well, I would do. I've just got an iPhone 11, so I'm slightly smarting. I mean, I'm happy but slightly angry at the same time, because this has the body and the form factor of an iPhone 8. But the performance, I mean, the CPU inside it, it's an A13. It's the performance of an iPhone 11.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. The price point, it's I think it's $399 starting price.
64 gigs.
Looking at the website now, it says starting from $419.
Oh.
Well, you see, that's because of the $399 US dollars, and we just assume, it'll be $399.
There you go.
They've actually put it up. Okay, $419.
look, for an iPhone to get into the Apple ecosystem, it's the cheapest way in, isn't it? And for the performance, it's fantastic. But Andy, what are you using? Are you an iPhone user?
No, I left that ecosystem a couple of years ago, and Stephen still holds it against me. I'm using the I'm on a Huawei at the moment, which is the P30 Pro.
Flagship. Yeah,
unfortunately, I left the iPhone ecosystem a couple of years back. But I mean, am I right in thinking that this is the first phone other than the iPhone 11 Pro to have this chip in? That is a very low price for a phone to have that huge amount of technology in.
Yep. Well, that's right. I mean, you know, there must be cuts somewhere. It's only to be expected. As the iPhone, the original first-gen iPhone SE was comparable to the iPhone 6S at the time of launch. You know, it was very nice, and there were some minor differences. It didn't have 3D touch or whatever, but no one really cared about that. For the sacrifice of the features that you lost for the price you were paying, it was great. And I think it's exactly the same for this one. I would have got one of these rather than the iPhone 11, I'll be honest, but I was unsure when this would be released or even if it would. But look, I know people, it's not just... Apple isn't the only fruit. You know, there's other stuff out there. There's loads of people that use Android. I have a Pixel 3 here in front of me, and it's great. My main driver now is the iPhone 11, just because I am comfortable with iOS, and I've got a lot of apps there. But Android is great. But I've got to say, you know, the iPhone SE really is, and Stephen says this all the time, it is the blind phone. The smaller form factor, particularly of the first one, you know, smaller screen. If you're not using the screen, you don't care about it. You want it as small as possible. Now, this one is bigger, as I said, the iPhone 8 size. So it's, what is it, 4.7 inch, I think? So it is slightly bigger, but... You know, this is, I don't know, I'm so happy about this, and I know loads of people are going to get, particularly because the home button and Touch ID, everybody loves that. I'm not convinced that Face ID is terrible. I think Face ID is absolutely fine, but I know lots of people who don't want to try it and want to stick with Touch ID and the home button.
I mean, it's all about the use case. I certainly use my phone in my pocket, under the duvet, all that sort of thing. So for me, I'm quite happy to keep the Touch ID, the home button. So what would you say was the reason for a completely blind person to go to one without a home button, for example? I mean, I'm trying to think of the use case here. I think there's a bump in the camera on this one, you know, a upgrade to the camera. It's certainly going to be sufficient for anything like seeing AI or an eye recall.
Anything is, to be honest. I mean, anything from the iPhone 4S is anything above 5 megapixels is fine for something like OCR. And I know people say this all the time, shall I get the iPhone 11 or shall I get the Pro? You know, because you've got the extra cameras. But if you're talking about purely accessibility reasons, to be honest, there's not much in it. You know, Be My Eyes, the cameras are more than capable for Be My Eyes or Aira or any OCR program, KNFB. So I really don't think that's an issue, more for if you actually want to take photos with it, which personally I don't care about. I know other people might, but I just don't take photos.
And the battery life is comparable. It's lighter, you know, smaller to fit in your pocket for maybe, you know, women's jean pockets, for example. I think it's a very compelling phone. My wife's home button died last week, so she's on her phone. So she has got the assistive touch little menu in the corner that she's having to use at the moment. So.
Oh, yes, the old workaround. Now, this is going to be such a big seller, and rightfully so. This is a great phone. It's a great price. That's what I keep... I know I keep coming back to price on everything I talk about, but it is important as part of accessibility as well. You know, not everyone can afford the iPhone 11, the $700, $800, the £1,000 price points that we're getting to now. And this is a great way to get into the Apple, you know, admittedly great accessibility on the iPhone.
Yeah, and one thing I would suggest is that if people don't need the latest and greatest, then if you can go one gen back, they always come down in price. Now, I don't know whether they're still going to sell the 8. That would be really interesting to know.
No, they're not.
Oh, okay.
You'd still be able to pick up while, you know, old stock is there, I'm sure. But yeah. Officially, they've canned the 8 now.
Right. And on eBay and places like that, you know, a great big wave of older models will come on board now as people upgrade. So, you know, they will be worth less. so hence you'll be able to snap one up.
Worthless? You know. How dare you, Robin? That's a bit harsh.
Potentially. So one of the slightly less.
One of the questions that comes in is whether or not this is going to be, when this was being announced, if this was going to be a 5G-ready phone. But it's not, is it? So that's probably the reason why it's in that sort of low end of the prices, is because it's not a 5G-ready phone. So maybe there'll be another iPhone later this year announced that will be the 5G range.
The rumours are that the 12s are not even going to be 5G.
No.
So, yeah.
I don't think they will be. I don't think the rollout of 5G at the moment is not enough to warrant. I know there are phones out there that do have 5G and make a big selling point of that, but I don't think it's essential right now. Next year, maybe that'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running out of time here. Sorry. I just love the iPhone SE. So if you have pre-ordered the new iPhone SE or you don't care about it and you think it's a terrible phone, either way, let us know. Send us an email. Andy, what is the Tech Talk email address now?
Yes, you can contact us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and you can even bother us on Twitter by going to RNIB Radio using the hashtag Ask Tech Talk.
Thank you, Andy. It's exactly the same. Nothing's changed since I was here. Anyway, okay, Robin, I think you've got some updates for us from last week's show.
Yeah, a couple of things that we covered last week. Harry Potter. We've had some love mail and some hate mail about Harry Potter. Sorry that I mentioned it last week. It's now available in the UK. So last week we said people in the US can ask their Echo speaker to play Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and you'll get that, you know, UK version read by Stephen Fry. And everybody else can go to wizardingworld.com, which is the new Harry Potter home hub initiative that J.K. Rowling has done to help with the kind of lockdown blues. But actually now, on the last Amazon Weekly email, it said that we've got that now in the UK too, and I've checked that. So you can ask the A-Lady here in the UK to read Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. So that's one update. The other was that we talked briefly about trackpad support for the iPad last week. And since we did, David Woodbridge, friend of the show, has brought out a brilliant demo using his iPad Pro with a Magic Trackpad 2, or is it Magic 2? Anyway, that one. And the big news there is that I was flummoxed last week because Stephen challenged me on exactly why a VO person, you know, someone using VoiceOver would want to use it, and I didn't have an answer. But actually everything that the cursor moves over is spoken out. You can select that option under accessibility. So I think that's really cool. You can roam around with having the iPad maybe up on its stand or something, if you're using a keyboard, say, and you can use this to kind of roam around, and wherever the pointer goes, you can hear stuff and you can click on them by tapping on the trackpad, etc. So I think that's really useful. And another thing that occurred to me is if you're a Zoom user, the last thing you want to be doing is dragging your Zoom focus around using your fingers on the iPad itself, because that's covering up stuff that you would otherwise be able to see. So drag your Zoom focus around using the trackpad as well. So yeah, a couple of use cases there.
Oh, good thinking. Well done. I actually love that. I always have the mouse over feature on NVDA or whatever turned on, because it is useful if I need to. I'm lucky enough to be able to use Zoom when I need to. And it really does make a difference. Just put your cursor over a paragraph of text and it just reads out, something like that. So great. Yeah, fantastic. Anyway, got to move on. And talking of moving, that was a terrible segue. I do apologise.
Smooth.
I know. I'm not a professional. Anyway, about keeping fit during lockdown, it's so hard, isn't it? It's so easy, as I said, just to sit on the sofa and watch Netflix or whatever. But it is important to keep fit. And Robin, as ever, you've been looking into this.
Yeah, so the Dot to Dot podcast, we have plugged it shamelessly in episodes past. But every single day, a new demo about what you can use the Echo for. And there are loads of really good workout skills in there. We're going to look at one called the Body Coach. It gives you a number of really, well, high intensity. So that's kind of probably going to strike fear into a lot of people.
Yes.
But they're short. They're short, guys. And they're really, really useful. Let's hear it first. I really like this guy. Let's hear it. The Body Coach, it gives us a number of high intensity interval training HIIT workouts that can take you from absolute beginner to body perfect. So it's delivered by a very chirpy Cockney Sparrow type chap. But yeah, he'll really get you up out of your seat. They're incredibly exhausting, even though they only last a few minutes. Let's open it up and give it a go. Alexa, open the body coach.
Hello, you little winner. You've come back for another workout. Absolute hero. Welcome back. Great job completing your last workout. Would you like to do it again?
Yes.
That's what I like to hear. Come on then, let's go.
Welcome to workout number one, a 15-minute beginner's HIIT session with five basic moves. We're going to do 30 seconds of work on each exercise, followed by a 30-second rest, and we're going to do the whole thing three times. The first move is nice and simple. Standing position, we're going to do a high knee march on the spot. So just bringing those knees up in front of you, trying to bring your knee across the body to touch the elbow. So that's it, nice and simple, starting in 10 seconds. And it's you against the clock, so try and do as many reps as you can in 30 seconds. Nice straight back, knees up nice and high in 3, 2, 1. Good, and we're off. So we're marching for 30 seconds. Then we get to rest for 30 before going on to the second exercise. Good, so bring that knee right up and across the body, lift it up, march the arms in 10 seconds left. Good, last few reps, lift them in 3, 2, 1, and rest. Awesome, right, next exercise, nice and simple, is gonna be a star jump. So a classic exercise, feet together, hands by your side. We jump out with the feet and up with the arms above the head, so forming a star. Off we go. So feet out, in, and arms above the head. Doing those star jumps. Good, keep moving. Try and make the fingertips touch above the head.
I'm getting exhausted just listening.
Good effort, come on, keep it up. Last few reps, 3, 2, 1, and rest, brilliant, right. Next exercise, a nice, simple, lower body exercise. Great for your quads and your lower body. It's gonna be a squat. So, feet about shoulder width apart. Imagine you're sitting down into a chair. You're gonna bend the knees, lower yourself down until your quads, your thighs are parallel with the ground. And from there, you're gonna drive through the heel, stand up nice and tall. And again, repeat that for 30 seconds. Here we go. And we're off, 30 seconds. Keeping that back nice and straight, chest up.
Really good description.
We've got another 5 seconds on the clock. Keep sitting low, stand up. One more rep and relax. Good effort, right. Next exercise. One, let's go. Box push-up, so bend the elbows, chest hits the floor and push, straighten those arms. If you can't get right down, just do half reps, it's fine. Just bend the elbows a little bit and push. They're quite tough if you haven't got much strength, but as you get stronger, you'll be able to get right down. Good, there's 10 more seconds on the clock.
I'll stop it at the end of this one.
Bend the elbows and press up. Good, last couple of reps. 3, 2, 1, and relax.
Stop.
Okay, I have stopped the workout. Goodbye.
Okay, there you go. I really like this one, the body coach. I'm actually going to try and use it. Still doing the press-ups, guys, by the way, from right at the beginning of the year. If you want to do the 100 push-ups challenge, go back and listen to that one.
Whew, thank you, Robin. I'm exhausted just listening to it. I've got to say, I did actually try this one out, and it was a nightmare. Not because it's a bad skill or anything, it's just that I am so unfit. It's a really good skill, in fact, and the guy is really good. Is it Joe Wicks, isn't it?
Yeah. Iris Cockney Sparrow, as I said in the thing there. Yeah, he's brilliant.
He is. There is something nice and it's really approachable, which makes a difference. But yeah, I tried the first exercise, the level one or whatever it was, and I was done after about 5 minutes. As soon as we got to star jumps, forget it, I'm done, I'm out. But I am like you, I'm going to try and keep at it because it, as I said, it is an approachable way and it's an accessible option. So yeah, it's really good.
He explains them really well. Yeah, push through that initial pain barrier. One tip I heard, which I thought was brilliant recently, was that he's talking about star jumps and stuff like that. And obviously, well, for me, I'm always afraid that I'm going to be traveling while I'm doing that and end up smacking the wall or, you know, expensive
like ornament a crown. On there. Yes.
Yeah. So if you've got a room of any size, get a mat, you know, some preferably like a meter square or something, and then just bung it in the middle and try and stay on that. And you'll be able to feel if you're, if you've traveled off it, and then you can just get straight back on and you're not going to go anywhere near anything that would be painful or expensive to encounter with at speed. Oh, so
going shin first into the coffee table.
Honestly, we've all been there.
So I thought that was a really good tip. Give it a go, guys. Really, really good.
Fantastic. Anyway, I've been looking forward to this. It's time for the news. I've got the jingle here somewhere. Hang on. Here it is.
News from the internet.
Oh, there it is. Oh, it feels like I'm home. Anyway, news. So, of course, the biggest news was the iPhone SE, but I can't talk about that the entire show, although I would like to. But there is some surprising news of Apple and Google working together to help keep track of COVID-19 infections. Now, wow, I know these are strange times, but Apple and Google working together. So how does this actually work?
So at the moment, it's a series of APIs that can be used by the NHS, for example, to create an app or equivalents around the world. And what it does is it uses Bluetooth, which is very low energy, and is sending out a randomized, so the sort of signal that gets sent out as you walk around, it isn't identifiable. That rotates through a lot of anonymous kind of IDs or whatever. So it's a rotating anonymous signal. Every time you come across another phone that's got the app on it that is sending out their signal, it will know exactly how close you got to that person. And because it's all about getting too close, then the Bluetooth range is absolutely fine. It doesn't have to be any more powerful than that. And all of these apps will talk to a central database, and if anybody subsequently is tested for COVID-19 and has got the virus, then they will be able to trace all their movements back, and all of the people that came within close proximity will be notified. And it isn't just about proximity, it's about duration of proximity as well. So it's how closely passed to them and how long you spent, you know, that close to them, etc. So, and then once they have managed to do an update to Android and iOS, it will be at the OS level. So you won't actually need to install a third-party app. Don't know what the time frame is. They haven't said in the articles that have been describing it. But I think that's a brilliant thing. But if they don't get their skates on, then it won't be timely, you know. But I know there's going to be a long tail to the infections. And so being able to deal with that long tail in as efficient a way as possible by contact tracing, I think is going to be the way to go. So, yeah, watch that space.
I mean, it does sound really impressive, but I've heard a lot of talk about, you know, people are really concerned about data protection, privacy. For me, I think, you know, almost the end result justify the means, but I think this sounds really good. There is a form of being anonymous around it as well, isn't there? I mean, it isn't a case of all your medical details are going to be logged somewhere and, you know...
Absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, texted to someone.
Yeah, the articles go to pains to explain that this isn't about you as an individual, although obviously if you need to be contacted because you've been in contact or close proximity with someone who subsequently got the virus, then obviously it is, you know, it will pop up on your phone. But in every other respect, it's completely anonymous, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Andy, what's your feelings of this? Have you got any worries about data protection? Is this a step too far or are you happy with it?
Well, yeah, this was an issue and this has come up a lot with this virus about whether you're happy to have your, you know, private details regarding your health shared with these companies and then effectively shared with other people that you've got in contact with. Now, yeah, like you said, it is anonymous to an extent, but surely you'll be able to work this out going down the line. If you've met someone and maybe they're the only third or fourth other person other than those in your household who you've seen in the last couple of weeks, then you're going to start narrowing it down. I don't know. I'm going to need to learn an awful lot more about this and contact tracing. But on the tech side of things, I'm just delighted that Apple and Google are working together. I think it should happen more in technology.
It's a beautiful day. They're working together. Now, look, it's a great news for great use for the technology that most of us have got in our pockets. You know, why not? Why not make use of it? That's what I say. Yeah. Now, next up is something that I've been looking into. Surprisingly enough, I've done a little bit of research into this. I know, shock horror for anyone that knows me. But this is the announcement of the Google Braille keyboard. This is a strange one because, you know, iOS has had the Braille input option for such a long time and it works really well. Well, now Android users can have it as well. When I first looked into this, when this was announced, I did not see it under my TalkBack settings, so I had to go through and update all the apps. And if you update the accessibility suite to, I think the version I've got now is 8.2, you should find it under your TalkBack settings. So go to your accessibility settings, then TalkBack settings, and swipe through, and you'll find the Google Braille input, or Google Braille keyboard, I think they call it. And it works pretty much the same, I'll be honest, as the iOS Braille input, which isn't a bad thing. You know, it's great. If something works, then I'm all for copying it, I'll be honest. So how this works is that when you do enable the Braille keyboard and you go to a text field where you need to enter text, you will get your standard keyboard up. And I'm using the Gboard, the Google keyboard. I'm using that one, and you need to find the switch language button, which is somewhere down in the bottom left corner. Tap on that, and then your Braille keyboard will come up. And the first time you use it, you do get a tutorial, which is actually really nice. It will walk you through step by step, and using it, you do use it in the away mode. So holding it in front of you, the screen facing away from you in landscape mode. On the left-hand side, you will have Braille dots 1, 2, 3. On the right-hand side, 4, 5, 6. And you simply tap away. And it does work, as I said, really well. It's really responsive. Now, I'm not great at Braille. I'm still learning. I'm still on grade 1. So it does handle grade 1 and grade 2 contracted. So I can't really testify to how well that handles, but for me, I think this is great. And look, about time. It's a nice move, and it's just nice to have that option. I think I'm slightly confused about what versions of Android are supported. In the tutorial, or at least in the TalkBack settings, I think it says from Android version 6, but on the Google support page, it mentions Android 5. So I think it's a case of just try it and see. But yeah, the Google Braille keyboard, it's fantastic. I'm really happy that we've got another option, at least on Android.
And we should say no tabletop mode as yet, like you kind of inferred there. But yeah, you have to do it in away mode.
You do have to do it in away mode. Yeah, there is no second option there, which is fine. I mean, this is the first generation release. There are some problems, well, at least there were, where you couldn't use it in Google Docs and Google Messages, which is a bit of a shame. But I'm sure that will be something that will be fixed. But yeah, it's definitely a nice option to have. Anyway, talking of nice things to have, another terrible segue, sorry. But I've got a tingle for another jingle. It's time for the emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day.
Ding dong.
Here's your mail today.
I miss doing that. That is my favourite. Anyway, we've had so many emails from you. Thank you so much. Remember, if you do want to get in contact with us, email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Okay, Andy, what's our first email?
So we're going to start referring back to an email from a few weeks back. It was Nadia's email about Spotify and Jaws. So this email's coming from Edward. Hi, Stephen. Well, that's fortunately because Stephen's not here. Following a query from your listener on a previous show, you can in fact add a song to a Spotify playlist using Jaws. However, you may need to install the desktop app first. Now, this is how I got it to work. And I should say that I installed it from the Microsoft Store. I don't know if the version downloadable from the Spotify website has the same interface. But once in the Spotify app, you're presented with what looks to be a web page in the Jaws virtual buffer. It will ask you to log in if you haven't used it before, which is, of course, standard process. Now, search for a song using the standard edit field. The best way to get the search results is to use Q to jump to the main region. There is no heading to initiate the start of the search results, but next, play the song. And I recommend immediately pausing it so that you can hear Jaws. But we need to have the song appear in the desktop player at the bottom of the screen, which is why we are playing it. Then you jump to the bottom of the window with Control and End, and it will find a link to the song. And you can route your Jaws cursor to it and press Shift F10. A menu appears at the bottom of the screen. You can jump to the bottom of the screen again, locate the Add to Playlist option, route Jaws to the virtual PC cursor and left click. Now you will find you'll land in various options, including your playlists. You'll find the playlist to which you want to add to the song. You can route the Jaws cursor to the virtual PC cursor and left click it, and then you're done. So it is a bit complicated, but thank you very much for that, Ed.
Yeah, there's nothing like making it straightforward, is there? At least there's at least there's a way to do it, and Ed, that's that was explained really well. Thank you for that.
I would assume he'd get muscle memory, so it doesn't, it won't be as complicated, you know, going forward, but wow.
Well done, Ed. Okay, Andy, who have we got next?
Hello, Tech Talk team. I thought I'd take a little bit of time to throw some light on the situation regarding Siri and playing radio stations for Robin. The radio facility on the music app of iOS connects with TuneIn to get its streams. Now, from the autumn of last year, the BBC, in its infinite wisdom, decided to withdraw its services from TuneIn in the UK. This was all to do with TuneIn not willing to provide the BBC with certain data. You can use Siri to play all other stations on TuneIn, which are available in the UK. And if you want to use Siri to play BBC stations, you can create shortcuts in the BBC Sounds app to do it. That one's from Ian. I can follow this up, in fact, because there's another email here from Brian on a very similar subject. So here's what Brian has discovered. On iPhone, if you have to play the main stations through the BBC Sounds app, which was obviously designed by the maker of the Hampton Court Maze, on Echo devices, you can still play the main stations, but they default to BBC Sounds. So this means multi-room mode will not work, as it seems whoever designed the sounds player neglected to pass the everywhere or bathroom, etc. string back to the Echo system to allow it to work. You cannot even play main stations from TuneIn if you live in the UK, unless you faff about with a VPN spoofed to be outside of the UK. However, most UK local stations will still work, but not all of them. World Service is one of those that still works. My guess is that the BBC has decided to not only not allow UK listeners online who can be seen by their systems directly, quite what reasoning behind this eludes me. It is, however, really irritating, and there was a storm of feedback on this some months back, but lots of platitudes about how great BBC Sounds is and not a lot of fixing the thing. Basically, according to the BBC, the sun shines out the BBC Sounds app, and if you think it's not their fault, it's obviously yours. Bah humbug. That's from Brian.
Well, thanks, Brian and Ian. So just going back to Ian's one, it's true that the BBC Sounds app does donate Siri shortcuts to the shortcuts app, so you can and then you can relabel them so that you can invoke it in any way you like. I just say, hey Siri, play BBC Radio 4, for example, but it doesn't work, and I'd really like to hear from listeners whether it works. I think it must do for Ian, because he's, you know, he's flagged it. Maybe it's just my phone, because I have had issues with shortcuts in the past not disappearing, even though that's, you've ticked the thing which says don't show on run. So yeah, I ask her, she says, okie dokie. Well, she says, okay, and nothing happens. So for all the it works for all the other radio stations via TuneIn shortcuts, etc., but not for BBC Sounds, anything BBC. So it feels to me like it's part of that plague that both of them have been talking about there. But that's not a good word, is it? That wasn't a choice, sorry. Plague on your houses from the BBC to all things tune in and a lady as well, and to a certain extent. So yeah, sorry, I don't, if it's working for you, I'd love to hear from people, and then maybe I'll reset my phone or something, or just get an iPhone SE.
There is a blog online that people are able to search. This is, if you search for BBC and tune in, you'll be able to go to a blog post on the BBC site written by Kieran Clifton, who's the director of BBC Distribution and Business Development. Now, it's a long, wordy phrase, but it basically goes into explaining why the BBC need this data. It's to help them collate the programmes that people like and, equally importantly, identify gaps in their commissioning to ensure that they're making something for all audiences. So that's why they're forcing people to log in using BBC Sounds or using BBC iPlayer so that they know who's listening, what you are, what age you are, where you are in the country. And this works for the audio side of things as well. Unfortunately, TuneIn didn't want to share that information, the data that they would get, so that's where the disagreement and the parting sort of happened. And yeah, that was of the 30th of August last year. And Kieran does go on to say that Google Home does not rely on TuneIn, so you can still listen to live radio using your voice by speaking to Google Home devices.
Now, that's a good point, because Google Home does get overlooked. I hold my hands up. I overlook it all the time. I've got two in the house, but I rarely use them. I've got far more Echo. So what does the Google Home rely on? I'm interested now. I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, much like you, Sean, I tend to avoid mine. There are two in my room. One of them is Lady A and one of them's Google. But yeah, the Google is gathering dust by the bedside table. So I need to use her more, and I think I will have to from now on.
We're bad, bad people. But like, look, this is a really frustrating situation to be in, though, isn't it? Where it doesn't seem like a good enough reason to me. We got to be balanced, and we the BBC have said it, the reasons there in the blog for collating and seeing what works and what they're missing and things like that. But for me, I don't know. I'm not sure I totally buy that. It does seem like this is just a way to make sure that the people that are listening, if you're listening to BBC Sounds or BBC iPlayer, you need to now sign in and give your postcode and whatever else. It seems far more likely that this is about TV licensing than anything else, which is
exactly,
I totally understand. But, you know, let's be upfront and honest about this. I'm not convinced by this. And at the end of the day, it just makes it more difficult for us as end users to listen to what we want to listen to.
You know, I think you're right. I think it is about the license fee and being able to track the people. But the huge irony there is that everybody else in the world can listen to them, but not the people in the UK. And it's only us that has to pay the license fee. So, yeah, moving on.
That is so strange. So if you use a VPN, you can get around.
If you use a VPN that puts you outside the UK, then yeah.
Wow. Whew, okay, that's slightly annoying. We'll have to see how this goes. Have we got time for more emails? I think we have. Why not?
Ah, plenty. Yes, this next one's from Norma. Many thanks for answering my queries around using a keyboard with an iPhone. That's from a previous episode. I have moved to be alone with members of my family. However, in my rush to pack all of the essential things, I forgot to include my colour indicator gadget. I do have Seeing AI, but I don't seem to be able to get the colour indicator function to work very well. Is there an app that I can download to my iPhone, which is a really good, reliable colour indicator? Many thanks, and stay safe, everybody. That's from Norma.
Oh, thank you, Norma. Now, I'm going to jump in and say no, but I'm sure Robin will prove me wrong.
No, I mean, I'm going to agree with you, really, because I think they're all subject to the same vagaries, really. So Envision AI, some people have, we've had feedback that their colour recognition is better. I actually think that they're all very similar, and it's very lighting dependent. So I've demoed Seeing AI on awareness days that Ability Unit run on a regular basis, and we do the different colour recognition and we point it at different squares of paper or at people's clothing or whatever it might be. And when it misreports it, actually, if you look on the screen, the colour that it thinks your shirt is the colour that, you know, the colour that you see it on the screen as is what is reported. So it's only as good as the camera and the lighting, and that seems to be really quite variable. So all I can say is I would probably stick with Seeing AI. Try turning lights on. Natural light is by far the best for faithful recognition. So if you can do stuff in the daytime, I know the days are getting longer, so that should help. But if not, the more light you can throw on it, the better. So yeah, I think it's just variable, and I don't think going for another option, and certainly not buying. But I mean, if her colour reader hardware solution that she forgot to pack is better, then maybe, you know, hardware, specialist hardware is better. But certainly all of the smartphone apps that I've seen have the same sort of level of accuracy.
Yeah, I got to agree, because it goes off, as you said, there's just so many variables. How far away you're holding the camera, the angle you're holding it, you know, the light, as you say, it just makes a big difference. And I haven't found any real positives for paying for a color identifier app, because it's all running off the same hardware. You know, basically, it's all doing the same thing. I would say, you know, if you do need to rely on one, as you said, Robin, you need to. It's a case of trying many different ways. You know, you can't hold it too close because then it's too dark and it uses the LED and that throws all the colours out. So it's a case of practicing until you find a way of using it, which gives you more reliable results. But yeah, I've got to say, they're not great on the phone, are they?
Nope.
Okay, we're running out of time, but let's get another email in, Andy, before we go.
Here's one from Josh. Hi all, I enjoy the show, with the exception of the jingles, which set my teeth on edge.
Oh, uh-huh. No, surely not. You don't mean these.
Hey, that's my favourite bit.
Beautiful.
Remix.
Sorry, carry on.
I wanted to share my experiences using the Mac platform and explain why the new MacBook Air has me drooling with envy. A few years ago, I bought a 2013 MacBook Air and loved it, and I used it to take notes in my university classes and to complete assignments with wonderful ease. However, what eventually brought me kicking and screaming back to Windows was the fact that if you don't do everything Apple's way, the experience starts to seriously degrade. When I used Pages to complete papers, I had to export the documents to MS Word format so that my Windows-based professors could read and grade them, leaving me with two copies of every single assignment I had to deal with. While I was able to use Word on the Mac, the experience was nowhere near as pleasant as that of using Pages. The other factor involved my love of audio games, which aren't made in high enough quantities for the Mac. So the new MacBook Air looks amazing. I'm sure I'd love it. But for the reasons listed above, and because I'm on a fixed income, it sadly isn't an option. I wish the Mac was a more viable option for me, because I also enjoyed the glossy, chic look of the OS. Ooh. Oh, well. Have a great show. That's from Josh.
Thank you, Josh. Well, I don't know what to say about this. I did jump on the Mac after loving, I think a lot of people did, you know, getting the iPhone and finding VoiceOver was so accessible. I love it. I'm going to jump on the Mac. And I got the Mac and thought, oh, hang on, it's far more complicated than I thought it was. But again, it's all about a learning curve. I do think the Mac is definitely a viable option, and VoiceOver on the Mac is very, very usable. I know lots of people prefer it over any Windows system. But yeah, there is a price point to get onto that as well. And as you said, I think the Apple apps themselves or Apple software are far more accessible than the third-party options like Word versus Page.
Yeah, Microsoft Office on Mac OS is not going to be that easy for you to use with VoiceOver still, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, everything else is common in loops and bounds. So I really love using a Mac and the integration it gives you with other iOS devices as well. But I do, and I've said this in previous episodes, I have to have a VM, because you can't really drive, you know, if you need to use Office, then you really don't, you can't stick with the Mac. So yeah, I feel your pain there. Yeah, absolutely. As far as audio games, last week we mentioned QC Salon. .net, and that's browser-based. I think there is a client, certainly for Windows and probably for Mac, I can't remember, but play it in the browser. Dozens of really, really accessible games there. And RS Games, of course, is available for Mac as well as Windows. So that's all, you know, screen reader-friendly gaming goodness, an avid following there.
Gaming goodness. Oh, that's such a tagline. That's beautiful. RS Games, I used to really enjoy that. I haven't played that in such a long time. I'm going to have to download it and try it again.
Still going.
Cool, yeah, I'm going to give it a go. And luckily enough, talking of games, it's like we planned this. I think we've just got enough time to fit in another one of Robin's fantastic dot-to-dot features. So if you're collapsed on the floor, exhausted after doing the body coach echo skill, you may want to try this one. It's far less strenuous.
Magic Gin, that's spelled J-I-N-N. Don't know if that's the normal spelling, but anyway, that's what it is. And it seems good. Alexa, open Magic Gin.
Hello, friend. I'll read your thoughts like magic. Think of an animal. Say, okay, when you're ready.
We'll go for polar bear. Okay.
Great. Does it have hair or fur?
Yes. You can say yes, no, I don't know.
That's what and sometimes... I thought. Is this animal larger than a motorcycle?
Yes.
Does this animal have horns or antlers?
No.
Aha! I see.
I love the sound effects.
Can this animal jump?
Don't know.
Okay. Does it have hooves?
No.
That's it. I've read your mind. But I'm going to ask you a few more questions, just for fun.
I love how it's all recorded.
Is it dangerous to humans?
Yes.
Does this animal mainly eat plants, grass, and fruit?
No. Mainly penguins.
Very interesting. Does this animal have a long tail?
No. A little stubby one.
Aha! I see. Does it live in the forest?
No. For someone who knows it and just wants to have a few more questions.
Does this animal live on the savannah?
No. He's asking questions that are a bit far off the mark.
That's what I thought! Does this animal live on the ice?
Yes. Oh, man, he must have had to record so many questions.
Aha! I see. That's it. I've read your mind. I bet you were thinking of a polar bear.
Oh, my gosh. Is that it? Yes.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable!
Oh, my gosh.
I'm so proud of myself.
Oh.
One more round?
No.
See you soon, friend.
Okay, guys, this is now one of my favourite all-time skills. It is done so well. If those had been A-Lady voices, then I wouldn't have been nearly so impressed. He must have had to record loads and loads of those.
I mean, how does that work? It always blows my mind. Thank you, Robin. That was fantastic. But how does it work? Has anyone tried Akinator? That always blows my mind as well. Anyway, sorry, I'm rambling. That was very good. But we're out of time. Thank you for all your emails. Don't forget, if you want to get in contact, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Get well soon, Stephen Scott. Stay in bed, at least till next week. And I just want to say thank you to Robin and Andy for helping me out and carrying me through this episode. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, everyone.
And of course, thank you for listening. Take care, and Tech Talk will be back next week. Thank you.